As he was thus walking, uttering no sound except to hail the men aloft, or to bid them hoist a sail still higher, or to spread one a still greater breadth, thus to and fro pacing, beneath his slouched hat, at every turn he passed his own wrecked boat, which had been dropped upon the quarter-deck, and lay there reversed, broken bow to shattered stern.
"Can't see the spout now, sir. Too dark,"
cried a voice from the air.
"How heading when last seen?"
"As before, sir. Straight to leeward."
"Good. He will travel slower now, 'tis night. Down royals and top-gallant stunsails, Mr. Starbuck. We must not run over him before morning. He's making a passage now, and may heave to a while."
And so saying, he placed himself halfway within the scuttle, and, slouching his hat, stood there till dawn, except when at intervals rousing himself to see how the night wore on. At daybreak, the three mastheads were punctually manned afresh.
"Do you see him?"
cried Ahab, after allowing a little space for the light to spread.
"See nothing, sir."
"Turn up all hands and make sail. He travels faster than I thought. The top gallant sails! Aye, they should have been kept on her all night. But no matter. 'Tis but resting for the rush."
The ship tore on, leaving such a furrow in the sea as when a cannonball, missent, becomes a plowshare and turns up the level field.
"There she blows! Right ahead!"
was now the masthead cry.
"Aye, aye!" cried Stubb. "I knew it. You can't escape. Blow on and split your spout, old whale! The mad fiend himself is after ye. Blow your trump, blister your lungs. Ahab will dam off your blood as a miller shuts his water gate upon the stream."
And Stubb did but speak out for well nigh all that crew. The frenzies of the chase had by this time worked them bubblingly up, like old wine worked anew. Whatever pale fears and forebodings some of them might have felt before, these were not only now kept out of sight through the growing awe of Ahab, but they were broken up and all sides routed as timid prairie hares that scatter before the bounding bison. The hand of fate had snatched all their souls, and by the stirring perils of the previous day, the rack of the past night's suspense, the fixed, unfearing, blind, reckless way in which their wild craft went plunging toward its flying mark, by all these things their hearts were bowled along. The wind that made great bellies of their sails and rushed the vessel on by arms invisible as irresistible. This seemed the symbol of that unseen agency which so enslaved them to the race. The rigging lived. The mastheads, like the tops of tall palms, were outspreadingly tufted with arms and legs. Clinging to a spar with one hand, some reached forth the other with impatient wavings. Others, shading their eyes from the vivid sunlight, sat far out on the rocking yards, all the spars in full bearing of mortals, ready and ripe for the fate. Ah, how they still strove through that infinite blueness to seek out the thing that might destroy them.
"Why sing ye not out for him, if ye see him?" cried Ahab,
when after the lapse of some minutes since the first cry no more had been heard.
"Sway me up, men! Ye have been deceived! Not Moby Dick casts one odd jet that way and then disappears."
It was even so. In their headlong eagerness, the men had mistaken some other thing for the whale spout, as the event itself soon proved. For hardly had Ahab reached his perch, hardly was the rope belayed to its pin on deck, when he struck the keynote to an orchestra that made the air vibrate as with the combined discharges of rifles. The triumphant halloo of 30 buckskin lungs was heard, as much nearer to the ship than the place of the imaginary jet, less than a mile ahead, Moby Dick bodily burst into view. For not by any calm and indolent spoutings, not by the peaceable gush of that mystic fountain in his head, did the white whale now reveal his vicinity, but by the far more wondrous phenomenon of breaching. Rising with his utmost velocity from the furthest depths, the sperm whale thus booms his entire bulk into the pure element of air, and piling up a mountain of dazzling foam, shows his place to the distance of 7 miles and more. In those moments, the torn, enraged waves he shakes off seem his mane. In some cases, this breaching is his act of defiance.
"There she breaches! There she breaches!"
was the cry, as in his immeasurable bravados the white whale tossed himself salmon-like to heaven. So suddenly seen in the blue plain of the sea, and relieved against the still bluer margin of the sky, the spray that he raised for the moment intolerably glittered and glared like a glacier, and stood there gradually fading and fading away from its first sparkling intensity to the dim mistiness of an advancing shower in a veil. Unmindful of the tedious rope-ladders of the shrouds, the men, like shooting stars, slid to the deck by the isolated backstays and halyards, while Ahab, less dartingly but still rapidly, was dropping from his perch.
"Lower away!"
he cried, so soon as he had reached his boat, a spare one, rigged the afternoon previous.
"Mr. Starbuck, the ship is thine. Keep away from the boats, but keep near them. Lower, all!"
As if to strike a quick terror into them, by this time being the first assailant himself, Moby Dick had turned and was now coming for the three crews. Ahab's boat was central, and cheering his men, he told them he would take the whale head and head. That is, pull straight up to his forehead, not an uncommon thing, for when within a certain limit, such a course excludes the coming onset from the whale's sidelong vision. But ere that close limit was gained, and while yet all three boats were plain as the ship's three masts to his eye, the white whale, churning himself into furious speed, almost in an instant, as it were, rushing among the boats with open jaws and a lashing tail, offered appalling battle on every side, and heedless of the irons darted at him from every boat, seemed only intent on annihilating each separate plank of which those boats were made. But skillfully maneuvered, incessantly wheeling like trained chargers in the field, the boats for a while eluded him, though at times but by a plank's breadth, while all the time Ahab's unearthly slogan tore every other cry but his to shreds.